This is Empowered Podcast, a podcast for interviews, discussions, and most of the time, chill and candid conversations with insightful thought leaders, inspiring educators, and courageous change makers who help transform, elevate, and celebrate teachers around the globe. Let's get empowered. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Empowered Podcast. We are now in Season 10, and one of the main topics of Season 10 is actually diving deep into AI and how it has been affecting and how it will continue to affect education in general. And today, we're very much happy and honored as well because we are going to speak to a very good resource person, an expert. I've worked with him in a few projects. And recently, the inspiration to this episode on AI policy framework for higher ed or for institutions. And he is none other than Professor Vicente Antonio Pijano III. I usually hear other people call Dr. Pijano as Prof. Tito at PACU. And he's here with us. Currently, he is the Chancellor and CEO of Philippine Women's College in Davao. He's the Chair of the Programs Committee of the Philippine Association of Colleges and Universities, or PACU, where I met Professor Tito. So welcome to Empower Ed Podcast, Prof.
Good morning, Jim. Yes, just a little bit of add-on. I'm actually not the chair of the programs committee, but I'm a member of the programs committee.
All right. Oh, thank you for that clarification, Prof. Could you tell us something? I got inspiration from the recent program that PACU has started, and you were on top of that based on what I've seen. Can you talk more about that program on AI policy?
Yeah. Well, in the various committees of PACU, there has been a lot of discussion on artificial intelligence in the last year or so. So one of the things that came out in the initial seminars and workshops was the need to actually concretize the policy at the institutional level on how we as institutions can actually adapt or try to manage, the entrance of artificial intelligence, especially in higher education. So the idea was to come up with a write-up to actually develop a framework, a policy, an acceptable policy, a template, so that schools can be guided as to how to actually effectively manage and cater the advance of artificial intelligence. The problem with this, Jim, is that times as are so the movement, the development in terms of the artificial intelligence field are really going in leaps and bounds, so that the schools, what's happening, the schools and their leaders and the teachers are actually running after the usage of those applications by our students. So we have decided in PACU to actually draft a template so that it is easier for the schools to adapt a framework for them to be able to cater and mitigate the use of artificial intelligence in the academic institution.
All right. It was a very successful event. I was part of that, facilitating and contributing as well to the template. The first question that I really have, that was just an introduction, by the way, to everyone, just to give you a context why Prof. Tito is here. Prof, why do schools or institutions really need a policy framework? And how would that policy framework affect the way schools, institutions, academic institutions in general, will adopt AI tools, whether in teaching, learning, even in operations, I think, because in the end, AI is everywhere.
Well, I guess first and foremost, it is a new technology, and it's a technology that is changing the way we teach, it is the way it is changing the way we evaluate our students. It is changing the way our students are able to gather data, the way that it is able to that they are able to actually use the technology by means which, how do we say it? It could be controversial in the sense that they're not actually learning, but they're letting a machine gather the information for them, and then they submitting it as if it is their work. So there are both practical considerations and, more importantly, ethical considerations. And in any technology that is new through the history of humanity, we have always been at a kind of at the grappling stage wherein we as institutions are actually sort of, we try to wait for things to settle before we actually act on them. But in this particular case, it goes to the very heart of what we do, and that is providing a teaching and learning framework, you know, and methodology for our students to actually learn. Now, using the generative AI approaches, no, such as ChatGPT and others, what is happening is that knowledge can be gathered without even understanding them or without even learning them. So the very philosophical underpinning of the teaching and learning process is put to question. Therefore, as academic institutions, what is important is to create a way by which we actually are able to create a framework to evaluate and to encourage the proper use of these technologies so that students are still learning the way they should be learning. That ChatGPT and the others like them are just there to augment the learning process. They don't replace the teachers. They don't replace typical research or the traditional research that we do. They don't replace the actual writing that students should be producing that requires thinking, analysis, and a very thorough process of decision making on what to write and how to write it. So the essence of what academic institutions is supposed to be is a training ground for students to learn these skills. So by having a policy, we are ensuring that we are able to effectively continue to maintain that very premise of what academic institutions should be. So very important ang policy, because that will actually protect us, that will actually guide us, it will actually promote the ethical use of AI in academic institutions. Yun lang naman ang hinahanap natin. We're not here to curtail the technology, but we are here to ensure that it is used properly in the performance of the learning, the teaching and learning process that the students would have to undergo. And in fact, it should not only be students. My major concern is even the research output given done by our faculty should also be still following the rigorous method by which researches are done, you know. So I think that's in essence why it is important.
I love your main point, and I got actually goosebumps when you said that. Because I do remember, because I've been in the edtech world for the longest time, and you know, there a lot of schools before pandemic, they were so chill about edtech. They would always say, you know, we can do our thing, we can teach even without edtech inside, and you wouldn't see a lot of edtech policies or edtech programs in school pre-pandemic. But then of course we have pandemic, that adoption of online learning, blended learning, and then we have AI. And I love your point, Prof. Tito, because you mentioned about how it goes deep at the center, at the heart of education, how our core bedrock beliefs and principles, our visions, actually everything that we do are being shaken up by the use of AI or by AI in itself. And I love that you also mentioned about the idea of, you know, we're not that it's not a competition, but it's just really giving everyone that opportunity to really look into it. It's not a competition of which comes first or whatever, but it's really being guiding everyone. Thank you for that main point. I first heard in Baku, for example, our the main concern during the write shop was how do we pin AI so that we can have a better template of work policies or whatever. But I think we have a very quick, like you've said a while ago, a moving target, a fast moving target. So what should be the content? Prof Tito, I want to dig deep in this one. If you were since you've you had already that template work done, what were your main points there? Non-negotiables that should come out in that policy framework.
Well, I think there are several. The first one is that the ethical use of AI, that's just non-negotiable, you know. Number two is the respect for intellectual property, you know. Number three is that we need to create a kind of a leveling field of the parang building block of knowledge for administrators to understand what the AI business is all about. I mean, that's non-negotiable in a sense because sometimes we decide on a vacuum that we do not know, since it's so new and there's so many things written about it, that you some sort of get the kind of a overload of information. So in the template itself, there's a glossary of terms which defines, it creates a kind of a building block of a common understanding of what the typical impact or the typical statements that are related to AI. And that's one of the non-negotiable, because it shows, you know, it creates a kind of a common understanding among administrators on how to deal with AI. It also comes out with a kind of like there is a suggestion, you know, to identify AI tools vis-a-vis whitelist, you know, like these are the acceptable programs or applications that can be used in an academic institution to facilitate learning. That's very important because it allows the institution to decide for themselves, but at the same time opens up the playing field as to what are the intricate and the moving parts in that playing field, you know.
Prof Tito, pulse check, for example, because the template itself will be adopted. I remember hearing you that it's not going to be imposed. It's a template because it identifies the basic things that needs to be in a policy framework, and it could be actually be contextualized into each schools or institutions' context and vision and mission as well. Prof Tito, pulse check. How are our schools, higher ed right now, how are they with AI? Are they very negative about it? Are they open? Where are they right now?
I guess just from our conversations, you know, within PACU, they're very positive about it, but positive with caution, in the sense that it also create a whole suite of problems for the faculty, for example, in terms of the quality of the work, you know, the worry that the students are not actually learning. And they're just feeding the information in the AI tools, and then it's the AI and tools answers that are being submitted for the actual work of the students, you know. So, but generally, I think the mere fact that there is interest, it shows that this is something that is quite positive, you know, for the whole stakeholder groups of education.
All right. I think that's a very how do you call it? What you've said, a positive view. I've heard of some schools having that how do you call it? It's being pessimistic but being hopeful. Hopeful as well that there's something they usually see it as a very challenging part right now because they don't understand, but they are hopeful in the end because they see it as in the end something that they could use. Prof, another question which really intrigues me right now. Of course, with the policy framework being adopted or in place, for example, we're assuming that accessibility to such AI tool is of paramount concern, because like what we've known, anyone who has access with technology, they usually have more advantage. Me speaking as someone who grew up in the province and later on realizing that if I had technology back at home, I could have done better. How do you see that as being a concern on top of the policy access to such AI tools?
Actually, it's a very important aspect. You know, equity is always a big problem, especially on a developing country like ours. You know, I worry sometimes that new technologies will actually widen the gap between the haves and the have-nots. And this will be no difference to that. In fact, what we should probably try to encourage is that to be able to give fair access to these technologies to everyone. Therefore, the presence of computers, the presence of internet connectivity, the presence of the cloud access, it's necessary, you know, and even more important, the proper training of the faculty, of the teachers, to be able to effectively manage the use of AI in their classrooms, you know. So I think what is important for our stakeholders, you know, in education, I deal mostly with the private schools, no? And in the private schools, that does not seem to be so much of a problem, because we do have computers, we do have the internet connection, we do have the cloud applications. But I worry for the public schools, where even the basic need of an electricity is not present. What more of computers? What more of an internet access? What more of the cost of paying for these applications, you know? So malaking bagay yan, Jim. Now we need to really ensure and advocate that equity should be applied both for private and public education.
Thank you for bringing that out, Prof. I think a lot of the discussion in AI is very forward looking, right? A lot of hope and everything. One of the insights that I've gotten back, I've been working on EdTech for more than a decade now. And right now, I just realized as well that, you know, AI is the next step, but you will only have access to AI if you have the fundamental tools, the basic tools that would allow you to really access AI. Like you've said, computer, internet. And we see that in the public school sector, for example. Access to books is really a concern to them. Fundamentally, inherently, books are very important. How can we provide access for them in terms of AI if the basic, like electricity, better classroom, teacher-student ratio, access to books, access to work, to good workbooks, all of these things are main concerns right now. And seeing that leap towards AI, sometimes it really, you know, makes you feel, how do you call that? It's not losing hope, but we need to see it as a very challenging part. So like you, Prof, we need to advocate for more of or for access, equity, and education, because like what you've said, schools who have access will be moving faster, and there will be some who will be left behind. I think that's, again, a main concern, no? Bigger digital divide. A conversation, for example, in abroad, even in businesses, even in economies, those who have access to AI will go first. They will probably take advantage of that, and those who have not, like what you've said, us in other developing country, might be, you know, left behind again. Prof, final question. Words of advice for fellow school leaders, for those managing schools. What would be your words of advice for them?
Well, first and foremost, I think we need to equip ourselves immediately by reading up on AI. Number two is to have an open mind. You know, there are a lot of things that are being said about AI. What we need to do is before we decide or we become afraid of it, read up on it first, study it, look at if you have access to the proposed template, ask for it, read it, because it will give you a kind of a building block of knowledge on what AI is all about and what are the complexities involved. Number three is to actually work on it and get to know it as soon as possible. Because fact of the matter is that your students are already using it without even you knowing it. And it will be sad that in the process, the students that are being produced by the different institutions, by the colleges and the universities, actually are not producing actual work or not actually learning, but rather just feeding questions to a machine. And what is being answered to is the one that is being submitted to our requirements in terms of our to fulfill our competencies, you know, and the outcomes of the particular courses. So we need to be able to get ahead of the curve. Because we are teachers, we are faculty members, we are mentors, and as teachers, mentors, and faculty members, our role is to facilitate learning. Our role is to ensure that our students are really learning, and that it is the process of learning that is important rather than the actual information that is being gathered, that our students are able to think creatively, that our students are able to write creatively on their own thinking and their own interpretation, on their own analysis, that it is not a machine who is writing for them. It is okay if they're asking the AI tool to provide topics that they can write about, but they should be the one writing about those topics, not the AI tools writing the paper for them or doing the analysis for them. They can use the tool to gather the information, but it is still the person who analyzes and deduces from that using a scientific method on how to come up with conclusions, you know, because that's what education is supposed to be, teaching how to think and how to effectively express yourself through writing or creative works for that matter. So, yun lang ang akin, ang importante, Jim, is maging handa at mauna tayo kasi baka kung mahuli, magulat ka na lang na yung pinoproduce pala natin ay hindi naman mga estudyanteng marunong. Kung hindi, yung trabaho lang ng AI, yun ang pinipresent. So, pasa naman tayo ng pasa. So, we are not going to fulfill our mission of creating learners who actually are thinkers and doers, you know, not just parang passing through the data and the information. Thank you.
Lovely words, Prof. And thank you for emphasizing the core. I love that the conversation really boils down to the core or the heart of how we do or why we're doing education. And in the end, it's not even for us. It's really for the students, the youth inside our schools, because we need to prepare them. And they might not realize it yet, because you know, for them, using AI makes their lives easier, but they might not realize it yet. They might not have that kind of foresight. In the end, they have to have those skills mastered and developed because it's for them. It's for their survival. It's for them to thrive in the future that they will have to cultivate for themselves. So thank you for emphasizing that, Prof. And it's been an honor to have you in our podcast episode. And to our listeners, I hope you were able to pick up wonderful insights from our wonderful guests. So, Prof. Thank you so much for for being here with us. I hope this is not your last episode, and we hope to welcome you back.
Thank you, Jim. And again, it's my pleasure to be part of this podcast to also help and express our views, to for the common interest and for everyone in education. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Prof. Thank you, everyone. And we'll see you in our next episode. Bye-bye. God bless us all.